everyone. Welcome to another week with the Chat People Radio. I'm glad to see you all here listening, so we have a great topic tonight. I spent the day today in Cape May, which is one of my favorite places, and very haunted. I was at Elaine's Haunted Mansion working on some upcoming events, so make sure you're checking our website for what's coming up. Some very, very exciting things and opportunities to investigate there with me and the rest of the group. So I hope all our moms had a happy Mother's Day yesterday. I know I did. And my daughter's senior prom was on Friday, and I just have to say that she looked absolutely gorgeous. Sorry, she's so embarrassed now. those are the light notes. And on Friday, we had an investigation that was that's interesting and centers around a cursed object, which we'll be talking about at a later date. What led me to the topic tonight, which is what happens in the afterlife, is some cases that we worked on that dealt with people who had committed suicide and how they were frightened and sad and did not want to move on and deal with what they had done. So I ran across this excellent guest we have tonight, Dr. Pamela Heath, and she has a degree in psychology, and she's also a medical doctor and has a doctoral degree in psychology. So she's an actual psychiatrist. Anyway, she started having these spontaneous psychic experiences in the early 1990s, and that's what spurred her maybe to get her second doctorate degree in parapsychology. So she has 13 years of experience investigating hauntings and spontaneous paranormal events. She's been on television as a parapsychologist and a psychic. She belongs to the Parapsychological Association, something that everyone should belong to. They're an excellent resource. And she's an associate of the Society for Psychical Research and co-founder of the Paranormal Research Organization, among other things. That's only a few things she does. She's published many articles and textbook chapters on psychokinesis, place memory, research, and survival of bodily death. Now, the book that we're going to be talking about is called Handbook to the Afterlife, and it talks about what really happens in the afterlife, and it just came out. And Pamela Heath joins us tonight from, I hope it's sunny, California. Hi, Dr. Heath.
Hello there. It's kind of cloudy right now.
I want to make one question.
I am not a psychiatrist.
You're not a psychiatrist?
I'm a physician, but my specialty was anesthesia.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm totally misread that. And it wouldn't be the first time I misread something. So I stand corrected. But she is a psychologist, right?
Well, I have a degree in it, but
I don't practice
as a psychologist, yeah.
Okay. You have a really strong background in psychology, which I find is very intriguing. As far as I'm studying the afterlife and the psychology of everything that goes into people that are experiencing paranormal things on both ends, from the witness or the human agent that's involved and also the possible spirit entity that's involved. So what got you interested in it?
I actually was already a physician when I started having psychic experiences that I couldn't deny. And I sort of went on a quest to try to understand myself and why I could do these things and see these things as an adult. You know, I wasn't somebody who had done this all my life. And that led to my getting the second doctorate degree. And I do like the advantage of looking at it from a viewpoint of psychology, because these people may be dead, but they're still people. So psychology very much still applies.
Oh, definitely. I just think of them as a person without a body, but it's still a person, just like we are. They have needs, and they have issues, and they have everything else that a normal person would have. Maybe sometimes, and maybe you can give your opinion on this, I think that sometimes they maybe have a little bit more going on, because obviously if they were well-adjusted, happy people, they probably would have moved on and done with the what was the right thing to do, I guess.
Yeah, the ones who certainly get stuck as ghosts have a lot of times have a lot of psychological baggage, and that's one of the big reasons people stay or seem to get stuck as spirits close to the earth plane. And in the Handbook to the Afterlife, what we do is we kind of look at the different stages, because one of the misconceptions is that, okay, once you're dead, you just go to the light, bam, that's it, you do the life review, and those are the only aspects of the afterlife people seem to be very familiar with. But there's all different stages. So just as if you were to look at a child, you've had children, so you know how they go through different stages as they grow and learn different things. Different parts of the afterlife have different lessons that need to be learned and accomplished, and different ways in which spirits can get stuck.
Yes. And what do you think is the main, what do you think, or what has been your experience with the main reason that people get stuck?
Confusion is probably the main reason. A lot of people don't realize they're dead. They don't understand what's going on. It's sort of like in The Sixth Sense, where the Bruce Willis character didn't realize he was dead. And this is kid who could see dead people, you know, realized he was dead, and he still didn't realize why is his wife ignoring him and all this kind of stuff. That seems to happen a lot, especially in our day and age, where a lot of people don't believe in an afterlife at all. And they believe that there's nothingness when the body is gone. And then they feel like they're alive. They feel like they have a body. Clearly, they can't be dead, because if they were dead, they wouldn't have consciousness. So it's confusion. There can also be confusion from drugs, from alcohol, from emotion. People get extremely angry and get in a fight and kill themselves sort of as an accident. Or in other ways, all these things can cause confusion that can make it hard for them to understand what's happened.
Okay, now you find this out through your psychic experiences, correct?
Actually, most of what's in this book actually came from reading lots and lots and lots of channel material. So it's not based on what any one medium or psychic says. However, I will admit that the last third of the book is the first time I kind of come out of the closet as a psychic. And I do talk about ways in which I move spirits on. And that's very much based on my experience.
I guess I am just trying to understand, when you have a psychic experience, and you said you started experiencing spontaneous psychic experiences. Just curious, do you see things or do you hear what? Do you hear them, or is it a combination of both?
Well, my initial psychic experiences were more ESP. Over the years, most of the time, I sense spirits with my mind, or in my mind's eye. I have seen them with my eyes once, on the Hornet, which is a very haunted and fun ship.
But, I've never been there.
Oh, you got to go sometime. But most of the time it is sort of telepathic or EST.
Okay. All right, I can understand that. I can totally understand that. That's, I think, mostly how I experience spirit presences myself. So I'm always interested to hear what other people say their experiences. It's interesting to hear that. And they are able to communicate what their confusion is or what their needs are to you in that way, correct?
Yeah, a lot of it is also, you know, for me, I like to get creative when I'm moving spirits on. And I feel that you have better success if you can make them feel comfortable and safe and sort of enjoy the process of moving on, finishing their transitions to the light. Mm-hmm. So I will actually sort of test things out in my mind, see what feels right, and go with it, and then, you know, check for feedback. Did it work? Did it not? But I talk about that, like I said, in the last third of the book, different techniques you can use, whether you're psychic, to techniques you can use if you're not psychic, what you need to do in terms of cleanup to shift the energy afterwards, because you don't want to leave a vacuum, and those sorts of things. there's actually a lot of things.
Sorry. That's a big thing people forget, though. I'm glad you brought that up, in that leaving a vacuum.
Yeah. Well, you know, energy abhors a vacuum is an old saying, and it's sort of true. So if you're going to erase negative energy, put positive energy back, you know, whatever that is, to you.
Definitely. I agree.
I wanted to say there's certainly a lot of things you can do, even if you don't consider yourself psychic at all. There are things you can do to help those on the other side. You can give them well wishes. You can give them prayer. If it's somebody who you have issues around yourself, whether it be anger or grief, dealing with those will help them also, because they're aware of our feelings.
Oh, they are. Many of the spirits that I've communicated with indicate to their loved ones, they want me to tell their loved ones, I hear everything you say. Like, I can hear you. Even though the living person can't always hear the spirit can hear what they say somehow. Obviously not with their ears, but they know what they're saying. So even if you can't hear them, I know that they can hear you, especially if there was a loved connection between you. And I think you're absolutely right with that, that you can send them well wishes and that will help them. How many spirits do you think that you have helped, I guess, cross over or move on, whatever? I'm not sure what term you use for it, so I'll just let you say it.
I usually refer to them as moving them to the light, beyond what I could possibly count. I tend to work moving them in groups even. So I've had times like on the Queen Mary where there's a line down the hallway up the stairs. And,
My gosh.
There's no reason whatsoever that you have to move them on just one person at a time. So I just bring a train from the light, and I load everybody on the train, and I just haul them out, or I bring buses, or I do it in mass. I figured, you know, why waste your time just one at a time, unless it's somebody who just really needs that extra individual help. That's just the last third of the book is talking about that kind of thing.
I noticed that you had a background in anesthesiology, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did that influence your decision, or did you have any experiences with people, I hate to say it this way, but maybe like as they were passing away when you were involved with that?
You know, I actually didn't. I didn't have anybody come back and said they had an out-of-body experience or anything at all like that.
Wow.
If anything, instead of anesthesia helping my parapsychology, helped my anesthesia in the sense that I got a better understanding of hypnosis and altered states of consciousness and how to talk to people and how to listen to people. I will say this. I had one person, there were just a few times in my career where I had people who told me that they were afraid they were going to die on the table. And in certain cases, I felt like they were right, and I actually tried to talk them out of the surgery, and it turned out somebody else ended up doing their anesthesia, and all three died within 24 hours, which was kind of scary. I had another guy, though, who'd had a dream the night before that a dead person had come and visited him, and he felt that meant he was going to die, and I said, well, maybe not. Maybe you're just going to visit with him while you're under anesthesia, and you can plan on just having this wonderful visit, have a great time, and then come back again. And he thought that was really great, and he did well under anesthesia. So hopefully that worked. But those are about the only experiences I had where intuition was really involved.
Did you Now, when you were writing this book, Handbook to the Afterlife, did you interview people? Is it based on your experiences, or is it a combination of both?
It's really mostly a combination of John Klimos and my experiences. He's my co-author in terms of the last book. And then the first two-thirds of the book is more a Cliff Notes version of hundreds, if not thousands, of books that we've read on channel material. And in Suicide, What Really Happens in the Afterlife, we wrote a little bit of a scholarly book because we knew we were on a sensitive topic, and we wanted to make sure people understood that we could back up what we said. And we decided with this one to do a Cliff Notes version, and not something academic, but to make something much more accessible and readable to people. So there's not a lot of quotes. We don't do as much proving what we say. Instead, we just sort of say, look, we have read just about everything that's out there, and this is our impression of what it boils down to.
Now we had, and it was funny because they happened one right after the other. We had about three or four in a row of cases that we were called to that were people who had committed suicide. The spirits were very confused, as you said, and they were very reluctant to leave where they were because they were still looking for what one of them was very, very sad. I mean, he was still looking for what he had been missing in life.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was they're very, very hard cases to work on. I don't know if you found that to be true with those, but it was very sad.
Japanese soldiers of war who died in World War II, I mean, those can be tough to move on. But part of that is culture. With suicide, you're right. We actually have a whole, you know, because they are kind of tough, we divided the book up. We have a chapter of messages to people who are thinking about committing suicide from those who have done it. We also have a message to those behind in terms of the grief, you know, letting go of grief and guilt, because it's almost as destructive to those left behind as to the person who took their life. And I don't know that we talk a little bit about how difficult it is to move spirits on. I don't know that we really get into that too much. One thing that I have actually found that helps if they were somebody who liked to read when they were alive, I will actually bring a copy of my side book with me, and I'll imagine an astral version, and they can see it because they can see the solid one in my hands, right? Or they can see that I'm holding something and I'm perceiving it. So I will hand them the astral version. I say, here, this explains things. Read it. And I've actually had that work.
Oh, I never thought of doing that. That is amazing. I'm definitely going to try this now when we run into another one.
Yeah.
The one spirit, I think all he wanted was for someone that would just accept him the way that he was and love him for that. And I thought, I don't know, to me that was just so sad that he never felt that from anyone while he was alive. So, I don't know. Sad. I never ran into a Japanese.
Yeah, by not moving on, he's keeping himself from feeling it again. And
he is.
You know, if you look at us in life, you know, psychologists will tell you that we all, to a certain extent, create our own realities. You have people with rose-colored glasses. Everything's wonderful because they see the good in life, and vice versa. The problem is that when you lose your body because of death, you no longer have eyes to see with. You no longer have ears to hear with. You're only going to perceive what you're willing to perceive. And they really create their own realities, much more so even than we do in life. And if they don't want to see people trying to help them, they don't see them. And that's what can make it kind of hard. Sometimes if they don't believe they're dead, they may refuse to see anyone who's dead. They may only see the living, and that's where rescue circles come in. That's where having physical cues comes in. If you can know the culture of the person who died, you know, regardless of their manner of death, if you can know their culture, then you can sometimes find cultural cues that help them understand what's happened. So, for example, with the Japanese prisoners of war, I brought Buddhist prayer beads and cherry incense and the different things that you do when you're talking to spirit ancestors. And, you know, so you can use visual cues in the physical realm sometimes to help them go on. Even the Islamic Book of the Dead has prayers to read to the dead. Tibetan Book of the Dead is a similar thing. There's all kinds of different ways you can try and cue these people into what's happening and explain it to them. And remember that because they don't have physical ears, what they're hearing is actually all telepathic. It's what's in your mind. So you don't have to look like an idiot talking about all this stuff out loud. There were times after I became psychic that I would see spirits in the emergency room, and I would know that this body that I'd been called for a code on was not going to make it. And I would talk to them. And I would, but I would not talk to them out loud. No, I'm not going to have all the other doctors. I'm a total idiot. But I'll talk to them telepathically. I'll explain what's going on. I'll explain what to do, what's happening, that they need to go to the light. You know that it, that, you know, their time is finished here. It's time to move on. That kind of thing. So, the one other thing I would recommend is I will sometimes get asked by spirits that they're hanging out because they want a message passed. I do not pass on messages, okay? And I don't recommend that people do that if you're a stranger, because they don't know you. They don't know where you're coming from. There's no reason they're going to trust you or believe you. It's much better if these people finish their transitions, and then they can come back in dreams and visit the living and give the message themselves firsthand. And I think that's better for all parties, and that's what I tell them. Finish your transition, then the spirit guides will help you to do this, and then you can do it yourself, firsthand.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. I don't know. I mean, it depends on people's belief system, I guess. But if you believe in karma, the longer you stay here without crossing over, you're still accumulating karma. You're still doing, you're still, that's everything that you're doing, you're going to have to deal with. There's no escape from it. You're not escaping it by staying here, you're just prolonging it. I know they're scared and they're confused and everything, but that's why I always try to get them to move on regardless of how they died, because I don't want them to continue accumulating that baggage that they're going to have to take with them. And their families don't want them to either, obviously. I mean, no one would. And then they're free to come. I think maybe they don't, I was going to ask you this, maybe they don't believe that they can come back, as you said, in dreams or in another way to communicate with their loved ones after they've crossed over or moved on.
Well,
maybe that's part of the problem.
If you listen to the spirit guides and what gets channeled across, a lot of people have misconceptions. And in fact, all of us probably have a certain amount of misconception about what's going to happen on the other side. So I certainly don't get arrogant and claim that I know it all. But there's a lot of ignorance. I think more often than that is fear. They feel like life is really horrible close to the earth plane. Or afterlife is really horrible, but they think that what could happen after they finish their transition could be much, much worse. You know, especially ones who believe in some kind of a hell or rigid view of, you know, religious view. And they're like, you know, I didn't get the last rites, you know, that means I'm going to go to hell. I can't go on, you know, this is bad, but it's only purgatory, you know, and it could be so much worse if I keep going. So, again, that's a case of ignorance. So a great deal of what you end up doing is explanation, education, and because they may or may not trust you, finding finding a source that they can trust and are willing to listen to.
Yes. It is. It's hard to build trust in, you know, meeting, you know, and I always say it that way, meeting a person without a body. You know, you've only met them for 10 minutes, maybe. They have no reason to believe anything that you say at that point.
That may be the one advantage I had from anesthesia. Generally speaking, you have about 5 minutes to your pre-op visit, and you have to get this person to trust you with their life. And so I guess I have a lot of experience getting people to trust me very quickly. And I do probably bring that in when I'm moving spirits on. That's an interesting point.
It is, and I was going to say, because my experience with anesthesia is that I am absolutely terrified to get anesthesia. I'm one of the nightmare patients that they have to give something to calm me down before they give me the anesthesia. You know, I'm always terrified I'm never going to wake up for some reason. I don't know.
It's a common fear. It's a common fear. Yeah.
Okay, good. I feel better now.
it's okay. You know, that's where my hypnosis training was very helpful, because I learned how, with just a few words, I could calm people down. And really, I think one of the advantages is that when you have people who are really scared, they're almost like little children in the sense of being very sensitive to the vibes around them. And they can sense if you're trustworthy, and they can sense if you're sincere. And, you know, so if you come across to them that way, you know, they'll pick up on it. And I think it's the same in the afterlife. You know, they may not have the physical cues, but they're certainly going to sense the energy you put out. And if you put out this energy of being very calm, very grounded, very, very much in the know, they're more apt to instinctively trust you just because of the aura that you're putting out. And I don't even mean that in a psychic or woo-woo kind of way, but just sort of your presence.
Definitely. I think that there are people that have, you know, there are some people that you just instinctively trust. You know, and I always joke around that there could be a crowd of 50 people, and I will be the person that the one person who doesn't speak English very well will pick out of the crowd of 50 to approach and ask for help. And I don't know why that is. I always thought it must be something to do with my presence or a way that I look or something. And the same way, spirits seem to trust me and listen to me. I do stay very calm, as you said. I don't have a background in hypnosis. That would probably be helpful if I studied it. But you just stay very calm, and I concentrate, I guess you would say, in the woo-woo way of sending out, energy of peace and love and, you know, just so that they can feel, because they're on an energy level, as I see them, so that they can feel or sense that I mean them no harm. I am trying to help them. And I think they do understand it. Maybe it's some kind of spiritual, you know, shot that they give you before they give you the anesthesia to calm you down a little bit. So I don't know. That's how I think of it. I try to think of it in terms that I'm going to understand.
Yeah, I found that body language actually did a lot to calm people down, that they would really focus in on what I was saying non-verbally as much as what I was saying verbally. And I do think that's true also. The one we've talked about, moving ordinary spirits on, every once in a while you do get one that is hostile or deliberately causing trouble. They know they're dead, and they're actually sometimes even harming other spirits around them or the living. And they don't want to move on. They're having a good time. For those particular cases, I recommend one of two approaches. Either to be absolutely neutral, no emotion one way or the other, just this is ending, you are moving on. I mean, it's just a fact, it's just happening. Or to really completely surround them with unconditional love. And if you come at them with one of those two ways, they really, they don't really have a defense against it. I mean, it's really pretty safe. But if you are in any way angry or upset or thrown off balance emotionally, it's not something to deal with. You know, you shouldn't be there.
Definitely not. Definitely not. I tell there's very few people in the group that I work with that actually do this on a regular basis. All of us have trained for a very long time with more experienced, I guess, psychic mediums, for lack of a better word, that can do this. And, you know, I tell the people who are still learning, if you ever get in a situation like that, and I'm going to tell everybody that's listening, where you feel uncomfortable, or you're starting to get scared, or you know you're in over your head, get out. Just leave. You have to get out. You can do a lot of damage to yourself, I think, and you don't help the situation at all by staying there in that state of mind, I guess I should say.
I have another suggestion, too, though, because people will bring this stuff home with them. And that is,
yes.
think of it as, if you were to go into a radioactive area, you're going to do a decontamination wash before you leave. And so I would imagine yourself bathed in white light that just cleanses your aura, gets anything that isn't you washed away. But either, you know, as soon as you step foot out, or certainly before you step foot in your own home. Because I don't see that people often talk about that or even think about it, that you sometimes end up, I mean, I'll go to people's homes sometimes and I'm like, there's a lot of stuff here that they brought home and
they
don't seem to realize.
Who is this person in the backseat of my car?
Well, it's not even necessarily that. It's just the energy sometimes. I mean, sometimes it is beings also. I mean, I certainly had people in my car and visit and stuff, and sometimes they're guides, and that's cool, and sometimes they're something else, and that's interesting. But I've become pretty sophisticated in the sense that if I suddenly start whistling, which I never do normally, or a song comes in my head, or something that sort of feels like it's not me or doesn't belong to me, or I'll suddenly get hit by an emotion that feels like it came from somewhere else, or it doesn't make any sense why I felt it, I'll start scanning around me. And a lot of times, there's a spirit there, and I'm picking up on their stuff. And it's like, okay,
right.
Let's move them on. Yep. But
I know,
worry about people
you have
who are,
to leave.
Yeah.
I know. It's not... it is very rewarding work. I probably don't do as many as you do. It's very rewarding, but it's definitely not for everyone. I can say that without a doubt. It is not for everyone. But I think it's something that you're called to do. I don't know if you felt that way or not.
You know, I kind of feel like my purpose of being here to a certain extent is about service. And there are different ways I can do it, partly through education, you know, trying to share things. When I look around and I see that there's a gap in terms of the books around me don't cover a certain topic, whether it be the mind-matter interaction, which I have a book coming out in a couple of months on that, or the suicide book, or this handbook. It's just, you know, gee, this would be useful to people. I don't see that there's anything out there that helps them in this way. Let me do the work to put this together for them. In terms of the other stuff, it's unpaid, and you just do it, and it's not for credit. It's, you know, you help others, they help you.
Well, it's good karma. That's what I always say. I'm building up good karma, hopefully, by doing this.
I don't even think about it from a karma, because then you're trying to get a reward of karma.
I'm not trying to get a reward, but I think that it just sets up a good energy, I guess, and then that's what comes. Like, you have to keep your good energy flowing, so that's what's coming into your life, whatever you're putting out. I guess I'm thinking of good karma in that way. So I wouldn't say it's so much karma, but definitely be sending out to be doing good things and doing positive things. And then that's the kind of energy that's in your life rather than, you know, being involved in more negative things or more selfish things, I guess I should say. Even though, I don't know. I mean, I could get all philosophical. Don't get me started down that path.
I would just say that life is about trying to make thoughtful choices. And
it is.
That each moment is a moment of choice. And you want to be thoughtful in it. That's something you hear over and over again in the channel literature. It comes out in the suicide book. It comes out a little bit in the handbook to the afterlife. But yeah, life is about being thoughtful, making thoughtful choices. And the afterlife has different purposes. It's understanding that you are not the collection of habits and beliefs that you thought you were, and starting to see sort of the greater you or the soul. And, you know, separating out the meaning of the choices that you made when you were alive. And they also do a lot of spiritual work, just like we the living do a certain amount of spiritual work. They do it too as part of growth and letting go of baggage.
Wow. It's a constant process, I think, is
yeah.
How I started to see it after when I started doing this work. I saw it as a constant process that doesn't stop when you die. It continues on a different level. And you're actually, from what I can see on this end, of course, I'm still in physical body. You're more free to release those things once you're out of your physical body, because you're free of all those physical needs that you had. They're all gone, so they don't interfere or distract. From,
you know, that's actually the opposite. No, that's
really?
Actually untrue. It's actually the
okay.
opposite. They tell us it's actually easier to grow spiritually in the physical plane.
When you're here.
And that's part of why they keep coming back to reincarnate.
I always think of this as the school of hard knocks. Don't tell me it's harder over there.
Now, this is where you can do it faster. You can do it in a more concentrated, effective way. Things seem to move slower. And if you think about it, one of the big differences between being alive and being on the other side is the issue of time. And time is sort of a boundary that we're very used to. But without time, there's no real boundaries. And I think it makes it harder for there to be the same kind of choices and individuality as you can have when you have in a body. So it's sort of interesting. You can actually, they recommend that the more you can let go of your baggage in life, the farther ahead you will be in the afterlife.
Right. I was just thinking that. I was like, maybe it depends on your spiritual or how much baggage you have when you leave life. Because I think that it would be so freeing to not have this holding me back.
The ironic thing is that there's very little that changes when you lose the body. You would think there is more, but unless you had a syndrome that's related to limitation of your physical body, and we're not talking drugs or alcohol, we're talking about, you know, DNA, genetic, you know, issue. For example, they talk some people who are developmentally delayed, and then they're normal on the other side. But for most people, there's no real change. That's the thing that's really kind of interesting. Even people with addictions, they still have their addictions. Because there's a psychological
component. Wow.
So,
that's kind of depressing.
I didn't mean to depress.
No. I'm just wondering about people that have, I'm wondering about people that have different kind of hereditary mental conditions like schizophrenia or bipolar disorder or anxiety disorder or something like that, even though anxiety is not hereditary, do they still have that in spirit, or is that something that they're able to leave behind?
If it's hereditary, they're able to leave it behind. If there's a psychological component, or if it relates to drugs or alcohol, they don't leave it behind. Not very well. But, you know, even if you look at, you know, one thing a lot of people talk about, things like marijuana, for example, 5 years after you stop using it, there are still changes in the brain due to it. So it's interesting, you know, you might think that this is that a lot of drug or alcohol use that you do in the physical body has a temporary effect on the body, but if you actually look at what's going on in the brain, 5 years can be how long it has an effect. That's kind of a scary thought.
Well, it makes sense because you can pick up if you I don't do it, but I know people that do, like, Reiki healing and energy work, and they say that you can pick that up for a long time after someone has stopped doing it. It's still in their kind of their energy field of their body. So it makes sense that it would affect you and that you would carry it with you to the other side. So when someone dies unexpectedly or suddenly or in a violent way, is their experience different than someone who doesn't?
A lot of spirits claim that it's more difficult for them to make a transition if it's a sudden death, that it's sort of a shock to the system. Now, that's not universal. And I don't know whether the difference is that sometimes you have kind of a life blueprint where some people might, it may not be as unexpected or sudden as you think if it was something that was kind of pre-planned as part of their life viewpoint, that this was how they were going to go out, in which case maybe their soul or their spirit separates a little bit from the body ahead of time, and so it doesn't get shocked. But about the only death that seemed to cause real problems for souls, maybe two types of death. One was death by explosion. That seems to be problem for them. The other is if you have a really long lingering illness, it somehow can make it harder for the spirit to recover, and in which they spend longer in a hospice type setting recovering or sleeping or something like that. I think in general, I saw more often channeled messages about people with sudden death having to spend a little time in coma or sleeping from shock to the system. But it wasn't universal.
Well, I don't think that anything is universal, I don't think. So, I know that sounded funny. I don't think there is any universal law, even though some people say there is. I find things can be very individualized. Should I say, there are certain spirits that would maybe be able to overcome that death by explosion, although to me that seems like it would be such a shock to the system. I can definitely understand how that would be troublesome in trying to cross over, because they would probably be wondering if they were dead or alive because they're still here.
Well, or it kind of disperses their etheric body is what they said. But the ones who did well, there was one James Van Prague channeled who had no problem at all. And it sounded like because he'd stepped on a mine, it was one of those that it didn't explode until you let your foot off. So he knew what was about to happen. And I almost wonder if his spirit kind of separated a little bit ahead of time so it wasn't caught up somehow in the explosion. I don't know, but I just noticed it's not universal. There are differences. I know some people are sometimes a little upset that it's not cut and dry, but, you know, we're individuals.
I was just going to say that we each have our own little path or our own agreements that we have made with ourselves, and we all have our own journey. So, of course, you know, there's no one-size-fits-all for this. And I agree, people get upset that there's not You know, you can't just give them directions and they can just follow it. Like, they kind of have to find the way themselves. And I think that people like you can probably help them on that journey, but they have to make the journey themselves. You can't do it for them or give them a map that shows them this is where you go and this is what you do. So, you know, for God.
I was just going to say, so Handbook to the Afterlife is the closest I can come for them to giving them a cliff notes guide that gives them general, it's not going to say absolute, and I'm not pretending I know it all, but it's the closest I can come to giving them that guide, that cliff notes version.
Yes, so everyone needs to have this Handbook to the Afterlife. Anyone that does work with spirits or helping spirits cross over, Handbook to the Afterlife, you've got to have it in your library and read it. I'm waiting for my copy still. I ordered it, but it didn't come yet. I know. It's taking forever. See, Amazon, you never know what's going to happen with it. It'll come. You know what, though? It will come at the right time. I just have to keep saying that, because if I start getting into where I'm scared it's not coming, then it's going to make it worse. So I have to send good energy to it, right? Get it here faster.
That's a I've had good luck with Amazon.
Yeah, well, okay. You know what? Usually you do.
I was going to say, it's also in Borders and Walden Books, and it's mainstream published, so...
I should have done that. I should have gone to Borders. So, give them a map that says, you are here. Somebody said that. you can't really do that. You can't give them a map and say, you are here. You need to go here, and have them give them a little path to follow. So I wanted to ask you also about, as far as suicide goes, and we mentioned some of the issues that surround it, is there a difference between people that, I guess, commit suicide because they're distraught or because they're, you know, they have a mental disorder or something, and people who are, I guess, have a assisted suicide that are terminally ill and they just don't want to be in pain anymore?
Yeah, there's a big difference. And it was really interesting. People who take the lives of a healthy body tend to have a lot of regrets. It's not like they're condemned in the afterlife, but it's not exactly applauded either. And most of the time it's like somebody who failed lessons at school and then you have to repeat a grade. And next time it could be even worse than it was if you'd stuck it out the first time. With people who are terminally ill, and suffering, there does not seem to be the same kind of attitude in the afterlife towards it. If you want to take the life of your body, you know, it's okay, it's understandable. They recommend that it not be a decision lightly made, that it be a very thoughtful choice, that it be made considering the needs of the people around you and not just your own. In other words, one of the things they dislike about taking the life of a healthy body is they say it's selfish. And you don't realize the impact it has on others and the sort of ripple effect of, you know, I know some people, their messages of regret were, oh, my six-year-old brother found me. You know, I never wanted him to have to see that side. And things like that. You just don't quite realize all the effects. Whereas if it's something that you're terminally ill anyway, you aren't really cutting your life short, they say, you know, you still want to think about it. There might be reasons why in your life blueprint you had planned, you know, to have somebody take care of you, or that there's a certain amount of purpose to what's happening. But if you and they decide this is the right thing for you, it's okay. It's not condemned. It's not frowned upon. And that actually kind of, as a doctor, kind of surprised me.
Wow. There's a discussion going on now about traumatic death in the chat room. Someone said that there are some people that say that when death is going to be traumatic, the soul, as you described, I think, separates from the body a little bit beforehand, as you did with the landmine explanation. Mm-hmm. And then someone else, Mandy, said that when death is traumatic, they have a more of a chance that they will be earthbound, which I think you also said. In a way, maybe.
Yeah, well, sometimes it's earth bound, sometimes it's just sort of comatose, sometimes it's confusion. It's a very complex situation because it depends a lot on contributing factors. What was your emotion at the time?
Right.
Were you on drugs or alcohol at the time? What were your beliefs about the afterlife? So it's sort of a complex situation.
So belief has a lot to do with it. That's what I'm getting, is that belief, what they believe is going to happen or what they believe should happen, has a great deal to do with it. We had one spirit that I ran into recently at a historic place that was still hanging around because her belief was that when she died, and I think you said this earlier, that there was just going to be nothing, and she didn't understand what was going on, why there wasn't nothing when she died.
Yeah, and you'll have some people who believe if they died early, they're forced to stay near the earth plane until their allotted hour comes up. That seems to be self-fulfilling prophecy. You have some who believe that they're tethered to their body until it rots away. There you can have a self-fulfilling prophecy. So, yeah, your beliefs can have a major impact. Of course, it's not complete. You will have some people who, because they had a personality that was sort of open to new input, even though their beliefs weren't met, they can be sort of taught or sort of brought along. There'll be some people go, wow, I didn't know this was going to happen, but, you know, oh, okay. Oh, is that how it is? Fine. So I think that's where personality can come into it. If you have somebody who's very argumentative, or very stubborn, very set in their ways, they're going to have more trouble. And in fact, sometimes the spirit realm appears to go to great lengths to try to meet expectations when you first cross over, just in order to get you to move to the other side, and then they'll work at gradually educating you to the reality of the situation.
Wow. We have a question for you. Do spirits ever get left behind because they may have unfinished business and they can't finish it now?
Well, I don't know that it's so much that it gets left behind, but they can send the guides away. You know, there are certainly, you know, we've asked the guides, is it the case that sometimes if someone dies unexpectedly, there's no one there to meet them? And we were told, no, there's always somebody there, but they may not see us. And they are allowed to send us away. If they say, I don't want to have anything to do with you, I'm staying, they'll go away. But it's not forever. They'll come back, they'll check. Any change in your mind? Oh, okay. And then they'll go away for a while. They'll come back, and they'll check. I don't think they really give up on anybody. But some people really listen better to the living than the dead. I don't know why. And that's where rescue circles can be very helpful.
Oh, definitely. Well, I think that the spirit guides and they don't give up on people because, like you said, there's no time like there is here. So there's no reason to really give up on somebody because it's not like there's a time issue where if they don't do it by this certain date. And that is something I wanted to ask you. Is it harder for them to cross over the longer that they're here, the longer they stay earthbound?
That's a great question. I haven't seen it. I've dealt with some spirits that were hundreds of years old, and they don't seem any more difficult than new ones. It's just a matter, I think, of being able to understand their cultural beliefs so that you can communicate effectively with them.
Right. That is so true. Because I try to tell people that, you know, you can't go in there with your holy water and your rosary beads for someone who was a Native American and maybe doesn't believe in that stuff.
That's
not going to be meaningful to them at all. It's not going to do anything. And they might get more upset at what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
One case that we had, the people kept doing the holy water and all this praying and like stuff. And the spirit asked me why do they think I'm evil? require the... Like, she said, like, did I do something? Like, why yeah. do they think I'm evil? I just was trying yeah. to get attention because I need help. Like, yeah. I wasn't trying to hurt anybody or scare anybody. And I, you know, it took a few minutes, like you said, to talk to them and say, assure you that they were just frightened. And that's their way of dealing with what they thought was something that was frightening to them. But it had nothing to do with them thinking you were evil. It was a shame. I felt bad for her. So the little things that we do like that, we can give. No, we can give these spirits messages that just like people, there are misunderstandings, things that they get confused about, as you said. And at least you have a background in psychology. I've taken some psychology classes, but not even approaching the level that you're at. And it helped me. Every psychology class I took helped me so much more understand people and spirits and where they are and maybe where they're coming from. So I would suggest that as well. After you read Handbook to the Afterlife, maybe take some psychology classes, some introductory ones. What do you think?
Hypnosis is very handy because it teaches you how to use language. It teaches you... the unconscious mind, it really is the gateway for all psychic information. So if you can learn how to deal with your unconscious mind, it benefits you on many levels. It can help you sort of clear your filters so you're less apt to bias the psychic information coming in. It can also help you improve the quality of the flow coming in, not just the accuracy, but the actual... I don't even know how to word this. You're building a working relationship with your unconscious mind, which has full access to psychic information. Okay? The
wow.
better that working relationship is, the better you're going to be able to do your work as a psychic, the more effective you're going to be able to be, and the more you understand the value of language and words and how to use it in a way to get through to other people's unconscious minds or spirits in a way that is sincere and honest but effective and reassuring.
Wow. I think you've sold me on hypnosis now. I was always sure.
I would go with someone who does the Ericksonian style, which is called sort of a feminine style as opposed to masculine style. And you can even pick up in your... pick up and read some of the stuff in your library by Milton Erickson or Stephen Gilligan or some of the others.
I am definitely going to do that, and thank you so much for all this advice. Bill just told me that we talked for a whole hour already. I can't even believe it. The topic is absolutely fascinating. It's something that a lot of, I think, paranormal investigators maybe don't think about what, you know, they should be maybe trying to help instead of trying to take photos and record these earthbound spirits. Maybe they should be trying to assist them in being where they should be. although, it's, you know, everyone likes to get that EVP. You know, you have to make sure that spirit's not trapped or confused and in need of help. So I want to thank you so much for being with us tonight, Dr. Heath, and I want to give you a chance right now for any last shout-outs if you have a website or any, you know, I know you said you can get a book at Borders and on Amazon, so I'll give you a few minutes to do that.
My website is www.pamelaheath.com. I have a lot of information and help, free PDFs you can download, even some MP3 files. My co-author's website is www.jonklimo.com. So that's John Klimo, Pamela Heath. And I hope you find that stuff helpful. I do have an extensive fact page, by the way. And if enough people email me the same question, that question gets added to the fact list.
Great. Your website is amazing. You have so much good information on there. Everyone should check it out, especially if you do work with spirits. So thank you again for coming and talking with us tonight. Like I said, it was absolutely fascinating, and I will look forward to talking to you again sometime, especially after I get the handbook to the afterlife, because I know it's coming in the next couple days.
All right, thanks okay. for having me on.
No problem. Have a great night. And everyone, don't forget to check our website, tricountyprs.com, for upcoming events, and thechatpeopleradio.com for our upcoming guests. And I will see you all next week. Bye.
The Chat People Radio would like to thank our audio engineer and producer, Bill Horton, voiceover announcer, Steve Shockley, your host, Laurie Hull. We want to thank you for listening to the Chat People Radio. We always welcome your suggestions and comments. You can find us at www.thechatpeopleradio.com. Until next time, keep it paranormal. The opinions expressed on the Chat People Radio are the views of the show's host and guests.